Welcome back to Brass Tack Sunday. This is Sanka Price here with you. Dennis Johnson's our producer. In our studio, we have the Minister of Finance and the Ministry of Finance and Investments, Mr. Ryan Strawn. We have Senator Caswell Franklin, the trade unionist, as well as the official spokesman for the opposition, led by Bishop Joseph Atherley. And we have veteran political scientist, Dr. George Bell. And we have been discussing, and sorry, let me add this, that Ms. Verla de Pisa, she had to leave because the Democrat Labor Party there are doing a retreat today because they're in the whole process of rebuilding. And we're very thankful that Mr. Pisa thought it was important enough to come here to represent her party. But we need to move on. And one of the things that we were discussing off air just now is how do we take this country forward? Because it's one thing to be mired in just talking about the different little incidents that occur, but we have to have a vision going forward. And I'm going to start here with Dr. Bell, and in terms of where should we be looking as a country to move forward now? Given all that is happening, where should we be looking? How should we be looking? How should we be going about it? Any ideas?
Well, I definitely feel that there's a major need for developmental reasoning. And it has to do with how you define Barbados and what its content has been for many years, and how that content possibly should be changed. And that has implications for population size, for the character of the economy, for regional integration, and for the way in which we look at ourselves, and then at the institutions that facilitate the development process. So it's going to involve governance, and it's going to involve many of the institutions that we take for granted, that it is a moment when we should address these things. But as I said earlier, you can't do everything one time. And if you have a serious problem to overcome, it's going to take up all your energy and effort initially. And you must be able to phase out how you're going to carry out the struggle to bring about the change. But I would say that at the core of things is to re-examine our whole view on development, and that has a whole lot of implications for various aspects of Barbadian society.
All right, thank you. Minister?
Yes, I just wanted to pick up on something with respect to where we want to transition, certainly not just government, but the economy in general. And I think as we go through this modernization effort to make sure that we can deliver better services for the public. So for example, not having these long lines wherever you go to engage government, but more than that, within the context of the private sector as well, such that Barbados now becomes much more competitive and efficient in what we do. But the transition to that requires that we also, particularly for those persons who throughout this process who may be displaced from government, that where we see the world economy going with respect to, not just from a much more digital point of view, but with respect to issues such as medical transcription and legal transcription and these areas which are very highly skilled, we see a transition in where, for example, across the region, everything that we need to do here in Barbados needs to be done in the region. Everything that we are doing here needs to be done in across Africa, in the Pacific, in Latin America as well. And so therefore there's an opportunity here as we engage this process to transition not just the persons who are displaced, but to recognize that across Barbados that we now have to engage the world in a way that's different than we are augmented what we did before. And I think that in recognizing that, the government has a responsibility in negotiating bilaterally with other governments those opportunities to help them as well. That here is an opportunity for Barbadianism to go into the world and do a very good job if you are able to stay the course with respect to the training and transitioning to be able to help others as we're going to help internally in Barbados. But from a I think a strategic standpoint, I think medical tourism, medical education, and how that hybrid, because obviously we've had a very good start with respect to our education system. We've had a good start with respect to our health systems, and how we merge the two or bridge them such that we can leverage what we have there now to be globally competitive and to provide not just services for tourists to come, but to enhance what is being delivered to the domestic population as well with respect to education and health services. And I think that it is that transition that we are making sure now that we can take advantage of, so that ordinary Barbadians will see the benefit, one, of the, yes, the need to improve our educational prospects, but with a globally competitive outlook. That's the kind of pivot that we now need, so that it's not 166 that any UWE graduate or SJPP or BCC person is thinking that you can only get a job in Barbados. And I think that's where strategically we want to transition the economy, in a sense, so that whatever you do, you have to be globally competitive. And that is where I think a lot of the conversation that you're going to hear and a lot of the emphasis on training and retraining and to be able to take advantage of not just the diaspora that we have overseas, but the way that we diplomatically now go and represent Barbados globally is going to be very important for that transition. Because from a developmental standpoint, we have always invested in education and good public infrastructure when it comes to health. And it's a naturally competitive area that we need to be able to take advantage of in a way that we haven't been able to do so in the past. And we believe that this is the time to focus on that and be able then for Barbadians to see that they can earn a living into the world.
Senator Franklin, the question I think a lot of Barbadians are curious about, and I'm certainly one of them, is I listen to the minister and I listen to the prime minister, and they're talking about this change, the training and whatnot. But this present public service, do you think that we can see the sort of change in attitudes that would be able to bring about this change in any way?
Look,
is it a fair question to ask?
It is fair, but then again, you got to understand what you're dealing with. The public service, in most cases, have been employed under the most atrocious conditions. Look at the police stations. Look at the immigration who just moved. You know, they were in that building for years. People become sick. And I'm talking about actually get really sick. You know, and one of the things that concern me when I hear people talking about that you will send people home based on the monkey sick leave. A lot of people had sick leave because they were in sick buildings and it devastated them. You know, people now have been made invalids because of the conditions under which they were working. You know, government has a responsibility to those people. And I'm not talking about Democrat, Labour Party, Baptist, they're talking about the government service now has a responsibility to those people that they almost killed. I mean, I know the courts so far, and I'm still wondering if the guy who died from the courts, if he died as a result, because after he died, everything started up. You know, they start cleaning down the lock and the stuff and looking and then shut down the courts. But one man had to die before to do that, you know.
Yeah, but let's get back to the question in terms of the changing of attitudes.
But the changing of attitudes. Okay. Public servants in Barbados, they are employed, you know, they expect they work for their 30 and 30 years and they do their thing and they get their pension at the end. And generally, you know, you might have some slackers, you know, but generally we got a good public service, you know. We got people who really work, and I'm talking about, I know I deal with them. And mind you, I was one of them. I used to work like hell, hard. But you have some slackers, and people only identify the slackers when they're looking to make issues against the government. Public service, National Housing Corporation, all these other boards and stuff are not public service. There's a difference, and people lump them all in. And if you look at the public service proper, people who are appointed by the Governor General under the Constitution as the public service defined in the Constitution, you don't get a lot of problems with them, you know. Only after the Act has been changed in 2007, where now people go for these interviews, and the best people don't end up getting the jobs anymore because the interviewers are told, this is the fellow I want. And we have situations where people turn up at a work, at a final interview, got the job, and then when they turn up for the job, they don't know what to do. But they want it because people tell them they were supposed to get the job. Political interference, even when the legislated the political interference so that they can do
it. This is back legally. In 1974.
No, I'm talking about 2000. Because they're political operatives, and the first guy, the minister, give me a job, I go, well, you got to work for it. I campaigned for you already. So a lot of them are not working. But I'm talking about the people, so that's some of the attitude that we have to change. Okay, I'm not saying fire them. I'm saying if the minister helped you get a job, don't go and embarrass him. Help make sure that he can probably say, well, I helped this person with a job, and this person's making my bills look good or something. So, but that's attitudes that we're talking about. People, and then we have a situation where people go and they change the qualification so that the existing people can get the jobs. You know, they change the qualification order. Just recently, 2016, you know, right now, nobody in the public service qualifies to be a school meals assistant because you have to have this qualification that the Caribbean CCLSC or something like that to be a school meals assistant. The only people that are qualified to be appointed school meals assistant in Barbados right now are in fourth form and fifth form at secondary schools because they started doing this in the third form a couple of years ago. But the politicians, they get in there and they change things without understanding what they're doing. You know, recently they put qualifications for fire service. The fire service qualifications were already in the public and the Fire Service Act. So, but these people rushing to make changes they don't understand, and they just change for change's sake. Mm-hmm. What we need to do is to have more, even if you have a commission of inquiry into the public service, or some sort of investigation, because the public service that we have. And the public service that is intended are poles apart. You know, public servants. Like, for instance, I was telling them earlier. It is. Do you think the problem within VAT? He's minister in the Ministry of Finance, and he know about these arrears. Why? That's something that should tell him. But it is an offence not to do so. But most people don't do that. Checks. It is the Code of Conduct and Ethics is 5C. No. But then again, you appoint politicians to be public servants.
All right. Let's take some calls. You're on Brass Act Sunday. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Mr. Price. Good afternoon to the esteemed panel. I want to speak to you because I want to give somebody else an opportunity. You said we're marrying problems, and what Mr. Franklin just highlighted there is a whole set of problems. But I want to ask a real profound question here quickly. Tell me something. If you play around with this patient, will this patient die in respect to the situation that is prevailing over Barbados? We don't have time to mess around and the topsy-turvy and warring and pulling it. The patient will die in the interim. Now, I am of the view, two callers last week made two calls Mr. Franklin highlighted on one of them just now, one of the comments. If a person is getting a fixed salary and all of these entertainment allowances and whatever, can we discuss with these persons that are in that situation if they will, if it for the love of country, as we want and use this term, consent to say, well, don't worry, my entertainment allowance is patriotism here now, don't worry with this. The cars that will be funded for the government, you use your own car, and all these other things, then one, two, renting of buildings, when you can refurbish government buildings and cut all that rent. These are things that we need to look at with urgency and then pull all of this together and bring the country and every cent that is made when we pull it in, we got to make sure none don't slip through the crack and bring us through the situation. I'll go for now, but I'll talk later in the week as regarding.
All right, thank you for your contribution. We go to another caller. Good afternoon, you're on the air. And thank you very much for holding. I know you were holding for quite a long time. Thank you. Go right ahead. Hello? All right, we take another call. You're on Brass Tack Sunday. Good afternoon. You're on the air. Okay, Brass Tack Sunday. Good afternoon. You're on the air.
Good afternoon, Mr. Price.
Yes, good afternoon. Go right ahead.
How are you?
I'm fine, thank you.
Good afternoon to your panel there. I would like to ask Mr. Franklin, why are you so vexed with Mia Montley? Why are you always attacking everything she done? She's only there 5 months. There's a lot of cleaning up to be done, and she got to get rid of some of the workers. I am so sorry for those who have to go home. You never tell the DLP when they send home nearly 4,000 or 5,000 people not to send home anyone. You, Mr. Franklin, have a beef, and we all know the beef you have. And leave Miss Mantley alone, please. Get.
All right, thank you very much for your contribution. We go to another call. Good afternoon. You're on the air. Good afternoon. Yes, you're on the air. Yes, I can hear you. Go right ahead.
Good afternoon. Mr. Franklin?
Yes,
why
ma'am?
Did you sit down there and allow Miss the pizza to mislead the entire public of Barbados? Me and you full well know that the case regarding the NCC had to do with consultation. It had nothing to do with LIFO. And for her to sit on the program and say that the tribunal made a ruling against LIFO was incorrect, and you knew that, and you sit there and you said nothing. Secondly, she made a point about the Employment Rights Act in terms of consultation. We all know the persons who were recently retrenched came from the public service, and the Employment Rights Act has nothing to do with the public service. And you sat there and you did not said anything to her when she was misleading the public of Barbados.
You want Senator Franklin to respond?
You want me to respond?
Yeah, let's respond to her. Thank you very much for your questions. Senator Franklin, respond.
The decision in the NCC case, the tribunal did address Larson first out. And the consultation process, it didn't just say one thing and finish. It was a long, I have it here and I was trying to find it while you were speaking. Right? The other thing, my job here isn't to correct Ms. DePisa. And the public service is, I'm not talking about the public service proper, not the statutory boards and stuff. They are not bound by the provisions in the Employment Rights Act. But it has always been government policy that the public service will be treated no less favorably than the private sector. So if there is a provision in the act that says that the government must do this, I mean the private sector must do this, and it is beneficial to the workers, then the government has always accepted and have followed through on that. That is the case. So I didn't stop her because one, is not my job, and two, even though the law does not say it is, it has always been government policy that they will treat public servants no less favorably than the people in the private sector. So people will be expected consultations, they will be expected to receive their benefits, and you certainly don't tell people go home the same evening, call them to a meeting, tell them go home. It is in the private sector that would be unfair dismissal. Government passed a law that says it is unfair dismissal to do that in the private sector and at statutory boards, and then they turn around and ignore what is supposed to be their policy and doing it exactly that. So I didn't have a quarrel with Mr. Pisa.
Okay. All right. Let's take another call. This is Brass Sack Sunday. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Yes, go right ahead with your question.
Hey. Mm-hmm. Hey, this is let's just speak to Mr. Strong, if he can answer to me, please.
Yes, you go
Mr.
right ahead.
Mr. Strong?
Sure.
Right. You stated earlier that the cabinet has been improved or we've added up due to certain circumstances the country fulfills it, right, Mr. Strong? But what I want to find out from you, when these public servants have been sent home from the government organizations, the public servants are the ones who really run the country. We're the ones who reports to the heads of the department, who then reports to the ministers, who permanent secretaries and stuff. When these people are home, how are the government organizations supposed to run?
Well, ma'am, we did a very, thanks for the question. During this exercise, we were looking at how we're going to rationalize some of the services that are being offered by public servants. And we have determined that within certain specific areas that we are going to develop a set of shared services that would allow departments to be able to function. whilst we are undergoing the not just the technology audits, but certainly implementing on the efforts for us to modernize government. And so therefore the focus here is not to remain or to simply repeat or continue to do the same procedures and stuff that we've been doing before. And that's part of the reason why, as we said, the modernization effort with respect to bringing these persons back to participate in that is specifically to allow us to be able to modernize government. But where multiple departments exist, for example, and I'll use just as an example the building in the government building in Warrens, which we refer to as the Barat building. The reality of the situation is that if we operated the same way as we did before, without recognizing that you're providing services within the space, then departments wouldn't be able to function if we continued to do the same things that we were doing before. And so to the extent that we are creating a set of shared or pool services within certain geographic spaces allows the departments and the ministries to run effectively simply because you're redeploying resources from one department to the other, or you're sharing the services, whilst at the same time you're doing your technology audits in order to be able to assess what exactly you're doing, how you're doing it, or how we're going to improve it, such that for the persons that you actually have employed in government and not necessarily within the department, that unless there's a very specialized skill that is required for that department, that as far as possible there will be a suite of shared services that will allow the government to run. Now, will it start off smoothly? I hope so, but the reality is that we now have to make those changes as we move through, simply because we cannot continue to do the same things that we were doing before. And so that is part of the strategy with which we are going to roll out, but certainly it is going to help us to be able to get to a stage where government is actually much more efficient. And then we can actually have people focusing on delivering the services that government's supposed to deliver, rather than being bogged down, in a sense, in the administration. And I think it is important to recognize that a lot of the processes and stuff that we are doing today were developed in the 1950s and 60s. And whilst there was nothing wrong with that in the 50s and 60s, we are in 2018 and we need to move in a different direction. And so therefore it is that reform of the structure of government, the reform of the procedures of government, that over the course of the next few months and years that we anticipate will help get the public service to be more responsive to what we need in the 21st century. I hope that answers your question.
But that is nice talk. Mm-hmm. But we have not seen that documented anywhere. We have not seen the plan. The plan right now is to save money by getting rid of some jobs, and the afterthoughts will come. You know, this is what you said. This is what is happening. This is what has happened.
That is not true.
So show me the document that identifies these problems. Let me finish.
Because you have not seen it, sir.
It doesn't exist. And before you show the people and tell them this is what we are doing, you say I want people, and now you are going to try to create this scenario. It isn't happening. They are just saying they want people willy nilly, and you're picking up people and saying we're not going to have clerk typists and stenographer typists. Not going to say a lot of these people don't do clerk typists, stenographer typists work. Just sending one for the sake of sending one people. You might have your vision, but your vision has not been.
I really got to stop you because it was said. No, hold on, Minister. Both of you, hold on. The point is, and this is why I was saying, let's try to take this to another level. In 2014, the Prime Minister Stewart made the point that from 2001, when Oinatha was in power, that the public service was 26,000 people and it should be cut by 10,000. Oinatha never did it. The Oinatha administration, never did it. And the Democratic Labour Party never did it.
Oh, they did it all. Okay. They sent home 6,000 people, man.
Well, hold on.
They sent home 6,000 people.
But the whole point about it is that, and that's why that speech is so critical. So you have a situation that's built in where you have too many people. We know, okay, because you are on the ground, you know that there was a lot of padding coming up to the last election. There's always padding coming up to every election. Every party in this country has done this. So therefore, the people actually having to go home was a given. You were saying it's willy-nilly.
It is.
Okay.
It is completely willy-nilly. See, look.
But
up to now, the Ministry of the Civil Service sent out a circular telling the departments, we're going to have to identify these jobs and stuff that need to go or something like this. And we want this list by the 31st of October this year. Today is the 21st. The people going home already. You see, that because they're making it look good. They're doing the paperwork that shows how it's supposed to be done. I've seen this done in government years. You know, even in jobs, you do the interviews, but people are already working, you know. So when the people that went for the interviews, they tell them, oh, you're not successful. So then they will put on file, oh, we had interviews. They will never tell you that the people were working before the interview start. This is what government does. And this is what they're doing now. They are not going to come with a plan, but haven't sent 100 people already. You know? The plan is there yet. The plan is developed yet.
All right, but you're not aware of any plan.
No, there is no plan yet.
No, you are not
aware of there plan. Is no plan. Sorry.
Mr. Right. Price,
the
Ministry of Innovation, Science and Technology has already begun the technology audits across government.
But there's 100 people already. You don't do the audits.
I'm saying to you, sir, that to answer the caller's question, mm-hmm. she asks how the government is to function. Mm-hmm. And I simply said, and in response to that, that if the structure of each department was to be the same as it would before, then it would be unable to function. And so therefore, the introduction of shared services, and as I said, within some of the geographic locations of government, and then obviously with the introduction of technology, that it would allow for the government itself to be able to function. And so therefore the data processing department is now expanding what is called the wide area network, which allows government to be on essentially one platform. The reality that this is work that has already begun. And so therefore, will it be smooth in terms of its execution in the beginning? I really hope so. But the reality is that it is those shared services, mm-hmm. such that I don't believe that the staff belongs to my department or belongs to yours, that we are pooling those resources mm-hmm. to allow the very ministries and departments to be able to function, rather than thinking that I need X amount of bodies to be live in my department every single day to be able to function. Because across the world, this is how large organizations behave and change over time. And so because Mr. Franklin believes that it's a willy-nilly exercise because he can't keep up with the speed at which we are moving, I appreciate his perspective. But the reality is, this is what we are doing. And part of the, as I said, for those persons who have been released in that clerical admin area, those are some of the persons who will be brought back on the project specifically to speed up the modernization.
Do you want to ask one more question, caller?
Caller,
do you
want? Hello.
Yes, do you want to ask one more question?
Yes.
Your baby want to ask a question too.
Okay. To Mr. Strong's response. Thanks very much for your response, Mr. Mm-hmm. Strong. However, my next question is based on the circle that was sent out from the head of civil service. We speak to general service supposed to be from the 22nd of October. How is this being done? Is this the LIFO method?
Yes, ma'am.
So does it have a particular year span, as in like year, how much years less than years we case may be, or is just the LIFO?
Sorry,
can you repeat? Does it refer to like 6 years or less, 10 years or less?
Oh, the general temporary person.
Yes.
It would have been 6 years and less with respect to the post for last in, first out. But specifically that it relates to the clerical grade, also the administrative grade that I referred to earlier. We actually went up to 9 years. And part of the reason for that is because obviously if you send home anybody that's over 10 years, then obviously they're pensionable. And there was something mentioned earlier about using the pensions to be able to move people. Now that's a very expensive process. And so part of what we are intending to do with the modernization of government, because these persons already have a good set of experience in understanding how government works. That they are the best young minds, persons that you're talking about, to be able to help lift that modernization effort. And so to the extent that that grade, because that was the specific grade identified that would be focusing on the modernization of government. And so therefore those persons who have been let go will form the nucleus, in a sense, of the modernization effort for government, because we really need to accelerate it. So you can't have public servants focusing on delivering public services and doing the modernization at the same time. Hence the reason for the shared service in the interim, until we can get that digital platform and everything in place, so that over the course of the next 2 years, the public of Barbados should be able to expect to see a different response from government. And then obviously what's left back with respect to the persons there, their focus then is on delivery of public services rather than on administration of public services.
All right, thank you, Minister. Sanger, and thank you, caller.
Sanger, yesterday, I spoke to two very senior people in the public service who are losing their typists. And they said, they expect me to do typing, and I'm typing. Because what the minister is telling us, they have not told the heads of departments yet. So I tell them, the plan is in the minister's head, and probably in some draw at the innovation of it, but I think get down to the actual people that's going to affect.
You see, this is why I asked the question about attitudes. Because, you know, quite frankly, when I hear this, and I worked in the public service for 2 years, all right? And I know about these attitudes. Some people will think, okay, but that's what they plan to do. But this is what I accustomed to, and this is what's going to continue to happen.
Hold on.
My concern is, because at the end of the day, if we're talking, we want a whole bunch of people employed, all we can think, that is a reality. That's an economic reality that I've been talking about since 2010, and I will stick to that. Okay?
No, but you're missing the point.
My point that I am making to you is this. How are we going to change the attitudes of people who have become seasoned in doing things in an inefficient manner? I see too much inefficiency.
No, you're missing the point. You're changing the point. The point that I'm making is the point we have to address. The minister said they're going to have these shared services among departments and all kind of stuff. But the department heads do not know of this. That is what I'm telling you. So that's why I'm saying that they have done it. They are doing it before they are ready. That's the point I'm making. All the points that you're making.
Okay,
fair enough. I'm telling you that these people, sent home these people to save money, okay. not to do these shared services stuff. The people who are going to be affected by the shared services, the people who got to be using the shared services, don't even know yet. This is in the planning stages within the ministry, within the cabinet and stuff. It didn't get long to the people yet.
All right, Dr. Bell.
Yeah, it's very necessary to discuss particulars, and people will tell you have to deal with the particulars before you go to the general. But if you get into a mindset in which you get engaged with the particulars all the time, and you go over these points for years and even decades, what happens is that you fail to recognize that the particulars are the children of the broader system. And the issue dealing with the broader system is a developmental issue. So we have a kind of economistic way of dealing with these particulars and glorying in it, that we could describe them more and more. Somebody tell me something yesterday and all that kind of thing. But that was going on for 10 years and 20 years. If you have lived long enough, you would hear that same story. So the question is, are we at a moment where the thing has become so deep that you have to go developmental? And you have to say, where is the birth of these things? What gave birth to that attitude that you were talking about just now? And then deal with it. And that is when you have to go developmental, and you have to go transformative, and you have to heighten the discussion, as Sanka has been saying. Because otherwise you're going to be forever down in that rut, down in that hole, quarreling about who get what yesterday and all kind of thing, and you don't do anything to change it.
No. The problem is that the problems are simply this, you know. Political interference.
It's been going on forever.
So they must continue it.
It was going on forever.
Ladies and gentlemen,
it's time to change it.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is the end of Brass Tacks Sunday, which we were talking basically politics. We were talking about, one, how the Democrat Labour Party can become more attractive to the electorate. Two, if the opposition, the present opposition led by Bishop Joseph Atherley and his key spokesman, Senator Caswell Franklin, is a very good critic of the present government. And I think you've heard that. And we were also looking at what is the fallout, if any, for the Mia Motley government in terms of these layoffs that have been taking place, of course, and the debt restructuring. I sincerely hope that you enjoyed the program. For those who sent us a bunch of messages on WhatsApp, I read a couple of your messages, and thank you very, very much for those questions that you would have asked. Of course, we could never get enough of those questions. And to those callers, I know that we didn't get to all of you, but thank you again for participating. And I sincerely hope that you continue listening to this program as we try to bring the issues and try to make sense of everything that is happening here. We are in a serious period, and we need as a country to look seriously at what is happening and get involved with the whole debate, because our future depends on it. Have a great afternoon. Bye-bye.